Hello, everyone. Welcome back from our most recent sabbatical. It is the Rebel Room, Ryan Green and Ray Brewer here. And we're here because not only is it the start of football season, but, well, we couldn't hold out any longer because this realignment stuff is nuts at this point, Ray. To recap this summer really quick, last time we talked to you, Utah took off for the Pac-10. Boise State was heading in. It looked like a wash at 19. Since then, BYU ruffled some feathers. Fresno and Reno come in. There's rumors that BYU might stay and a 12th team might be added. Now BYU is gone, signing a long-term deal with ESPN, a home-and-home football deal with Notre Dame. We'll get into the specifics of all of it, but end of the day, the Mountain West is left with 10 teams and still with an uphill climb to go if it wants that BCS automatic qualifier status.
Yeah, a great Cliff Notes summary there of what's happened the last 3 weeks. Bottom line, all the conference shakeup, man, it's about football and getting that BCS game. The Mountain West looked like it had done some good things by bringing in Boise State, but when you lose Utah and you now lose BYU, kind of maybe a step back in that quest to get the BCS game. I know, at least by reading our message boards, a lot of UNLV fans are singing the na-na-na-na, goodbye to BYU. I think they're happy to get them out of the league for basketball. They hate them so much. Obviously, it's bad for the league for football and basketball not having a quality team like BYU there. But BYU is a team that you either hate them or you like them. And obviously, the folks in Las Vegas hate them, but I think they do need them, Ryan. Your take, my man.
Well, it's funny because I think let's talk about local impact here. Look, we can say all we want about this, but the local impact of it is people here care about basketball more than they do football. So Las Vegas people are looking at this from a Las Vegas mindset, which means they're looking at this from a UNLV Rebels men's basketball standpoint. That said, this is good for the Rebels because, you know, Kruger said a couple weeks ago, he told me that he'd still like to play BYU in non-conference games in basketball if BYU leaves. But it makes winning the Mountain West that much easier for the Rebels. I mean, plain and simple. Now, if we're talking about it from a football standpoint, oh, and not to mention, like you said, UNLV basketball fans hate BYU. From a football standpoint, though, I'm just left to wonder. I mean, look, we talked about this the last time. Boise State and Utah pretty even. But does Reno and Fresno combined equal BYU? I don't think so. What is – you talk about the league wanting this BCS bid, which Craig Thompson makes no secret about it. That's what he wants. But what is BYU really trying to get at by doing this? I mean, they keep saying access and exposure, and I think it's just a PC way of saying more money. And look, just man up and admit it if that's the case. Because obviously they're not putting themselves in any better of a position to get a BCS game here by going independent in football.
Exactly. And BYU got more money today. They signed that deal with ESPN. It's going to give them the exposure that they wanted. But you got to think, I mean, pretend you're a recruit. Why would you want to go play football for BYU? What bowl games is, you know, could they end up going to? Mm-hmm. Obviously, you have no league title to play for. Your chances of landing an at-large in the BCS, slim to none. You know, unless in 10 years you become this dominant football power. Well, you know, to be good in football, you got to have a ton of, you know, talent and athletes. Is BYU's roster of 26-year-old returned missionaries going to fit the bill for that?
Yeah.
I mean, probably not. I mean, let's be honest. Yeah, in terms, it hurts. This is a blow to the Mountain West because ultimately you want to get that BCS game because you want to get the BCS money. That's what football's about. You know, the more money you have, the better facilities you have, the less you got to go take a game like going to West Virginia to get your teeth kicked in, you know, to fund the program. So BYU losing, definitely a big blow for football. Basketball, maybe not so much. The league was great last year. You know, San Diego State, 14-bid league. It looks like this is a league on the rise. You hate to lose BYU, which is so great at home and such a big part of the league's success. You know, if you're looking at the state of the league, as far as UNLV going to play BYU, you got to ask yourself a question. And I know the fans are thinking this. Do you want to keep the? It's a great rivalry with BYU, but do you want to keep it going? Do you want to give them money? Mm-hmm. Because obviously by leaving, they're going to be searching for games and everything, even though they'll be affiliated with the West Coast in basketball. Does UNLV want to get in that financial agreement?
Yeah, and you know, now the big question that everybody's going to have is, what does the Mountain West do moving forward? Because as it looks in 2011, you're going to have the 10 teams that you have. If you're Craig Thompson, let's play I'm the commissioner right now. What are you doing? Are you going out? Are you trying to get Houston and maybe a UTEP? Are you trying to beef it up some more? I mean, your options are kind of limited here. Let's not forget that. What are you doing?
Well, who's the one team out there that you could get that would help in the quest for the BCS is the question. Is it Houston? Is Houston good enough in football to where they could warrant that BCS? The reason I like UNR and Fresno coming in is Fresno's got a great respect nationally. Not quite of what Boise State has, but you know, they've played in big games. They've done well in big games. They almost beat USC, what, 4 or 5 years yeah. ago. Nevada, no slouch. They go to a bowl all the time. And so those
two are strong programs.
Two upgrades to the conference in the quest to ultimately get that BCS game. So the question out there now is, obviously the Mount West needs to add another team. Well, what team could it get from a league what team could help them get the BCS bid? Is it Houston? Is it UTEP? Are those the two best teams out there?
Mm-hmm.
Especially,
I mean, those are probably your two best options, but the thing is, I'm kind of in agreement with you, I think. I don't think they fit that bill and that they're going to put you over the top. I think you have a strong 10-team conference. You're obviously now falling out of the Salt Lake City TV market, which hurts some. But, you know, it's a strong conference, and more important, it's a strong conference that can survive. I think you have to remember that. I don't know if, you know, Houston and let's say, for argument's sake, UTEP puts the Mountain West over that threshold to get into the BCS, because now, I mean, you're looking at a league that has just as much BCS chops in terms of a resume as it did before.
Exactly, and you got to remember the bottom tier of the league for football, the Mountain West. When you start throwing like teams that are, you know, every once in a while, Wyoming will be good. I think they'll be improved this year. But when you look at like San Diego State, UNLV, Wyoming, Colorado State, those are four teams that just totally bring your BCS credibility down. So I think ultimately in the long run, unless the Mountain West was able to add somebody that would just blow your socks off, I just don't think that it'll ever be a BCS caliber league. It is what it is. You got to accept who you are. You got to wake up every day. You got to look up and you got to look in the mirror, and you got to realize that, you know, you're 34 and you're going bald. That's what I do. You know what I'm saying, brother? Mm. I mean, the Mountain West can't be what it's not. And it's not a football league. It's a basketball league. Okay, it's not a BCS league. It's a league that wants to get four teams in the NCAA.
It's the best non-BCS league.
It is the best non-BCS league. And Boise State is definitely a player. TCU is definitely a player. Make no doubt about it. Those are two teams that should be that have proven themselves on the BCS stage. But, you know, are they going to get any credit for, you know, beating UNLV's teeth in the middle of October?
Oh, boy. Well, the moral of the story, we probably haven't seen the end of all this. I'm sure the end of it is probably never going to be seen. You know, Jim Livengood, the UNLV AD, has even said there's more probably to come a few years down the road. It might be done for now, but it's not done for good.
Speaking of the new AD for UNLV, I think when he was hired, I might have been a little critical of the hire, just because when you look at it, you look at his age, and you think he was coming here to retire like John Robinson did. I think I was wrong. I mean, I think this guy's really done a good job of, you know, being active in all the, you know, the realignment. You know, he was with the WAC commissioner Carl Benson, you know, a day before everything went down.
He's been looking out for UNLV, and he's been doing a good job of it.
Yeah, and I think what I overlooked initially was, here's a guy that's been in the Pac-10 for a while, very respected. He's been through everything. He understands how to put up. So I think UNLV is 100 times better off in its administration with this guy driving the Cadillac instead of what we had before.
His biggest hire to date was first-year football coach Bobby Houck, and his era kicks off on Saturday. We're going to switch gears here because UNLV, a very marquee opener of sorts against number 12 Wisconsin, 8 p.m. out at Sam Boyd Stadium, the first leg of a 13-game schedule, which only includes six home games. And, you know, Ray, we've been talking about this schedule ever since the end of last season, and now it's here. I mean, has our opinion of this team changed at all throughout this fall camp compared to where it was heading in?
You know, I don't think so. The schedule is just It's impossible to navigate. The good thing is if you want to prove yourself, if you want to prove that you're a player, you're going to have plenty of opportunities. And to be the best, you got to beat the best. Another chance. You're just going to get better playing good teams. The thing I like about the Wisconsin game this Saturday, the opener, it's the last game of the day. It's the only game that's going to be on TV. So UNLV is going to have its chance to show what's going on, to show mm-hmm. that they're improved, to show that they're better than, you know, last year they were the 112th rated run defense in the nation. Well, here's a chance to show that a new era has started.
Yeah, and no one better to do it against than Wisconsin. Like you were saying earlier, a very experienced offensive line, strong, strong lead running back in John Clay, and this is a team who really has a lot of buzz coming into the season. A lot of it stems from their bowl game win last year over Miami, which really was a slaughtering that a lot of people didn't expect. And, you know, maybe that gets looked at. People forget about the fact that it was a really muddy field that maybe favored Wisconsin a little bit over Miami. Miami's speed really wasn't a factor. Do you think Wisconsin is a little overhyped going into this season?
They just look so good. I think it was the Champ Sports Bowl where they beat Miami. Yeah. They look so good in that game. And when you look at, you know, they're a Big Ten team. They're big up front. They run the football. Well, they got a great tailback. They got five returners on the line who've played together for 2 years. And it's a team that I think is one of the, you know, 12th in the nation, and rightfully so. They look so good on that game against Miami. And when you return so many people like that, and you're from a big conference, I think that, sure, UNLV could beat them. They've done it before in Wisconsin, and they gave Wisconsin a run the last time they were here 3 years ago. But I just think this team is – I think Wisconsin is going to be one of the elite teams. I think it's a 9-10 win team.
Okay. I think that's a pretty fair argument. But let's look at the other side of it all now. UNLV, there's a lot of questions coming in this year. The big one right from when Houck was hired and started implementing things was who was going to run the show. And Mike Clawson pulled a +250 upset of sorts, unseating Omar Clayton as the team's starting quarterback. That was announced this week. Clawson, a junior who started one game last year, this is a guy who played in almost every game the last 2 years. A lot of people criticized Mike Sanford, for myself included, for playing him a few series game, but you know it paid off somewhat when he did have to start and play in the place of Omar Clayton. This guy's led a fourth quarter comeback against Hawaii last year. This is an experienced guy, not some wet behind the ears backup. But you know, about 6'3", very strong arm, strong runner, big body. This is a guy who seems to fit what Bobby Houck wants to do with this offense, and that's control the clock and make very few mistakes.
Yeah, and the coach said that both quarterbacks were even in camp, and ultimately you're right. Clawson runs better than Clayton. Clayton probably throws a little bit better of a ball, but you take in that. I also think that Clawson's a little bit of a competitor. He's mm-hmm. got that edge about him where he wants to win. He wants to get that extra yard. Go back to the Oregon State game last year. He comes in. I think UNLV's down. Was it two touchdowns, 20-7? Next thing you know, they almost win that game all because of him. The combination of passing and running, I think, was a preview of things to come. And Clayton is going to play, though. The question is, how much is he going to play? Mm-hmm. Is Clawson going to get, you know, is he going to play the entire game? Is it going to be a 50-50 thing? Is he just starting? So a lot of questions that are going to be answered on Saturday. You know, ultimately, I just think that UNLV lacks depth in a lot of positions, especially on the defensive line. You know, two freshmen on the two deep chart. It's not a good formula, but I guess he's stuck to his word. He said when he came in, every position is up for grabs.
The best player is going to play, and he doesn't care what year they are.
Exactly, and I mean, he proved his point right there. You got a senior who was the starter the last 2 years. Well, guess what? You didn't win the position.
And you feel bad for Omar, but he was kind of a victim of poor timing almost, just a poor situation where, you know, he was a quarterback built for the spread offense. The spread's gone now, and it's Mike Clawson's turn. Now let's look at this game specifically. It's pretty clear there are a couple advantages on UNLV's side. They're not completely left in the dust here. Two that stick out to me. Well, one, now there's three, because now with Clawson starting, because you don't have a ton of film on the guy. That's one. Two, Wisconsin doesn't have a ton of film on UNLV, period. You know, any game tape from last year is out of that shotgun spread. The defensive scheme is different. And if you just look at Montana tape, you're not seeing the same personnel. Three, the temperature. It's going to be 105 as a high on Saturday. And, of course, this is a night game. But, I mean, 105 during the day also means it's going to be about 100 at night. How's that going to affect Wisconsin in the fourth quarter if this game's close? These little advantages, do you think it's enough to keep this a close game?
I really don't. I just think Wisconsin runs over UNLV. I go back to last year. They could not stop the run. I mean, they had absolutely no chance, and that's what Wisconsin does well. I do like the fact with the weather. You know, UNLV's been practicing in the weather. They're familiar with it. You know, Wisconsin, obviously not a hot state. It's definitely going to be a factor. But is UNLV going to keep the game close enough to where it is a good factor? One thing I do like about UNLV's chances is they kind of are going to have like a three-headed monster at tailback with Trotter, Cox, and Bradley Randall. I think all three are pretty even and capable runners, so they're always going to have a fresh tailback out there, and you already alluded to the fact that they're going to want to try to control the clock with the running game. Mm-hmm. They're going to see a lot more runs than what we were used to the past years with Samford, and I think having three fresh legs back there kind of will work in UNLV's favor.
I think it does. The key to UNLV having a chance in this game is keeping it close in the first half. They have to go into halftime with something to still play for, be it a game that's within 3 points or 7 points or a tied or whatever. If this game goes into the second half and it's a coin flip game on the scoreboard, I really think it could be anybody's. But let's offer up some predictions before we get out of here. I'm not picking UNLV to win this game. I think it's about a two-touchdown game. I think they do a respectable job. They're not going to throw in a towel, because that is one thing that Hauk has brought with him is, he's definitely hardened some of these guys. I think you're going to see my score prediction. I'm going about 31-17 here.
Okay, I'm saying that I agree everything with what you said. New coach, they're really paying attention to detail. You know, they're going to be in the right spot. I think ultimately, though, talent is going to just kill UNLV. I think Wisconsin wins big. I say by 30 points. One quick question for you. 38,000 people, the stadium seats. How many of those are wearing Rebel red? How many of those wearing Wisconsin red? Do you think it'll be a factor?
I say 50-50. I think you're going to get 15,000 UNLV fans, 15,000 Wisconsin fans. That's my guess.
And UNLV will take 1,000 pitchers and use it for all their promotional stuff to promote football.
Exactly. You capitalize when you got butts on the seats.
Exactly.
And it's all going to look red.
Exactly. So you're going UNLV loses by about 14-15 points. I'm saying UNLV loses by 4-plus touchdowns.
Yeah.
Mark, put it on the board, babe.
We're going to keep standings on this year.
Okay.
For Ray Brewer, this is Ryan Green. We will talk to you again next week in the Rebel Room when we will preview UNLV's first road trip under Bobby Hauk, where they will head... Boy, no breaks on the schedule. They'll head to Utah. We'll see you again next week. Enjoy the game this weekend. Take care.